Listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. The views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au. Welcome everyone. Everyone is welcome here, no matter what your background, age, ethnicity, sexuality, gender. But we really mean that. Every person is welcome. No one is judged unworthy of being here. At the Unitarian Meeting House, where we have been worshipping, meeting since 1854 in South Australia, previously in Wakefield Street and here for the last 50 years or more. We acknowledge that we meet on the traditional lands of the Kaurna people, and we respect their elders, past and present. There are a couple of things I can alert people to. For those for whom it's relevant, the Committee of Management meeting next Sunday, 9 a.m. I can also let people know, although it has been advertised that there's a Shady Grove service this afternoon, that won't be happening due to illness, if anyone was planning to head up to the hills. Everyone is welcome to the meditation session, 5 p.m. this Wednesday. Although it's a good idea to talk to me, let me know if you're coming and I can let you know what's involved. But everyone is welcome, and it's worth trying. We have a regular band of people who join in that practice and find it extremely beneficial. So you might want to try it sometime. I'll let people know that on the way out you can make a contribution in the foyer, either cash or with a tap and pay point. But most importantly, we're glad you're here. And now some music from Brendan. Father and Son. Appropriately, since it's Father's Day, if you didn't know. So, happy Father's Day to all the fathers. Thanks, Brendan. And I might ask you today for another favour to light the chalice flame for us. This is part of our custom that we light this candle as a focal point as we gather around it as a community. And I have a little reading to go with it from George Bernard Shaw, one of his plays. This is the true joy in life. The being used for a purpose recognized by yourself as a mighty one. The being a force of nature instead of a feverish, selfish little clod of ailments and grievances, complaining that the world will not devote itself to making you happy. My life belongs to the whole community, and as long as I live, it is my privilege to do for it what I can. I rejoice in life for its own sake. Life is not a brief candle to me. It is a sort of splendid torch, which I have got hold of for the moment, and I want to make it burn as brightly as possible before handing it on to future generations. And now, a poem. Fred will come forward. Adapted from a song by apparently a well-known singer, Keith Urban.
Song for Dad. Lately, I've been noticing I say the same things he used to say, and I find myself acting the very same way. I tap my fingers on the table to the rhythm in my soul, and I jingle the car keys when I'm ready to go. And when I look in the mirror, he's right there in my eyes, staring back at me, and I realize the older I get, the more I can see how much he loved my mother and my brother and me. And he did the best he could, and I only hope when I have my own family that every day I see a little more of my father in me. There were times I thought he was being just a little bit hard on me, but now I understand he was making me become the man he knew that I could be. In everything he ever did, he always did with love, and I'm proud to say I'm his son. When somebody says, "I hope I get to meet your dad," I just smile and say, "You already have." The irony is that my dear beloved stepdad, 96, is slipping away as I speak.
Beautifully and sensitively read. Thank you, Fred. Custom, we may light candles of joys or concerns, personal matters to us that we are willing to share today. I'll light the first candle. If there are no others, then I'll light a final candle for all of those concerns and joys that we have in our hearts, but this is just not the time to express them. Let's spend a minute contemplating what we've heard, praying if you will. We're constantly reminded of the need for healing on an individual level. And we pray for wellness for those we care about and in fact everyone. We pray also for national healing through our own conversations and actions, we contribute to that. And on this day, we remember fathers, their special role in our family. Fathers close to us, fathers who have been distant, fathers who have been lost. Let us be grateful for what they have given us, what they have taught us. Let us forgive them when they have failed us. Above all, let's celebrate their role in our life.
Once we have broken free of the prejudices of our provinciality, limited ecclesiastical, tribal, or national archetypes, it becomes possible to understand that the supreme initiation is not that of the local fathers' aggression onto the neighbours for their own defence. The good news, which so many have been glad to hear, although reluctant apparently to demonstrate, is that God is love, and that all without exception are his children. Trivial matters as the remaining details of the credo, the techniques of worship and devices of Episcopal absorbed the interest of Occidental theologians that they are today seriously discussed as the principal questions, reduced the father image back again to the dimensions of the totem. And this, of course, is what has happened in the world. One would think that we had been called upon to decide or to know whom of all of us God prefers, which is much less flattering. Judge not, that ye be not judged.
Thank you, Jill. Well, I offer you some thoughts today on fathers. It should be an easy one. We just celebrate all the great love and guidance provided by fathers throughout the centuries and in our community. And then I can spend 20 minutes telling dad jokes. But, I didn't have time. I've cut them all out, actually. Maybe celebrating fatherhood is not so simple. Maybe one dad joke. If we accept Carl Jung's hypothesis that we carry within our psyche images of archetypes shared with others in a kind of collective unconscious, then it must be worth exploring what it means for there to be a father archetype. One can't deny that images of fathers are prevalent throughout human cultures from ancient times to the present. We've been presented with probably many thousands of images of fathers, good and bad. Of course, most of us have just to relate to one father, our own, if he is still around. Just as we are human beings with our finer points and failings, our father was or is just the same. Jung coined the term complex for those unresolved psychological challenges we carry around as a result of significant relationships and incidents. These psychic knots are a source of unresolved feelings, which can erupt or block other feelings in a way that seems out of our control. This irrational constraint on our day-to-day interaction with people seems out of our control because the complex is in our unconscious mind. We're not carrying around awareness of it unless it is thrust into the spotlight through some confrontation. One way or another, the unresolved problem continues to colour our relationships until it is resolved. No doubt many of us go to the grave without resolving some of the complexes that we carry around. The reason that the vast majority of people have mother complexes and father complexes is because of the awesome impact our parents have on our psyche when we are young. They are like gods to us. We instinctively make demands of them as young children, and the way those demands are ignored or satisfied, conditionally or unconditionally, can have an impact on our relationships for the decades which follow. I'll give one example of what I mean. In my professional life, I had to deal with a man who was a bully. He was frequently aggressive and insulting to his colleagues. I was able to learn that, in fact, when he was a teenage boy, he had been abused by his alcoholic father, who had virtually no constraint on his behaviour. And so the problems of that interaction stayed with this fellow I had to deal with through his adult life, at least well into it. And it came out in a way that one could say he couldn't control. He instinctively turned to insults and aggression when he felt he had the upper hand in an interaction or when he was seeking attention. And one could see, with some perspective, that he was playing out both roles, because he was playing out the role of a persecuting father. But when he was called out and told in no uncertain terms that behaviour is unacceptable, you cannot insult your colleagues, you cannot be aggressive to your workmates, he then took on the victim role. The world is against me. Management are against me. They're trying to hound me out of here. He was the victim. So you can see how that complexity, that complex in his mind, led to this eruption of irrational behaviour. So on Father's Day, I suppose one of the messages I'm offering is that we do want to celebrate fathers and be grateful for what they've given, but at the same time we don't want to paper over the failings with a John Sands gift card and a box of chocolates. Children learn stuff at school. They even learn thinking, if it's a good school. But they'll be learning their ethics and their self-image from the adults with whom they live. So what are fathers meant to be? What makes a good father? Immediately we get into the controversial question of gender differences. Are there gifts which only a male parent can provide? Or must male parents play a different role to female parents? Thousands of years of cultural practice would suggest yes. In our age of gender equality, at least among the educated elite, however, the question is worth re-examining. But first, let's look at some of the idealised father images we've seen in mythology and recent popular culture. These images have told us what fathers are meant to be. We just need to keep in mind that whether we're talking about ancient myths or popular cinema, these images have all come about in a patriarchal society, and they have usually been generated by men. We folk here have been part of an educated minority who have transcended patriarchal values, but the gender division into men who are hunter-gatherers and women who are domestic was with us for thousands of years, and it's still prevalent in much of our society today. Surveying the mythologies which developed around the earth thousands of years ago, there are many striking similarities which can't be explained by exchange of information. For example, the Navajo natives of North America, a number of Aboriginal tribes of Australia, the Maori of New Zealand, the ancient Scandinavians, the ancient Greeks, all feature archetypes of a sky father and earth mother. In some cases, the father in the sky is a sun god. In many cases, the sky father is anthropomorphic, sometimes as a wise old fellow in a beard, sometimes as a rapacious tyrant. In essence, the image is a male tribal elder drawn large to fit the role of creator, guide, and overseer of humanity. Mother Earth, in contrast, is depicted as tangible, sensual, nurturing, embracing, and life-giving. The question is, to what extent are we still influenced by such imagery? Carl Jung actually didn't write a lot about father archetypes as such. He wrote a considerable amount, however, about 12 archetypes he thought were a part of all of us. Arguably, at least 4 of them could be associated with the popular image of fatherhood. And let's acknowledge that I'm dealing with a stereotype. Every one of us can relate to all of the archetypes to some degree. Let us just take 4 of them for the time being: the ruler, the hero, the sage, and the magician. The ruler seeks control and can delegate control. The ruler archetype is related to that part of our psyche which has an urge to provide structure. Each archetype has its dark side, which Jung referred to as the shadow side. The ruler can become a tyrant if imposing order without due respect for the subjects. The hero seeks to acquire mastery and can teach mastery to others. A man of action, perhaps a warrior, a protector. He can fight for noble causes, or as a shadow hero, becomes a bully, wounding others without good cause. The magician seeks power and may use that power to empower others. The hero and the magician both relate to that part of our psyche which seeks to leave a legacy of some kind. The shadow magician may seek power only for aggrandizement of the ego rather than acquiring power to create and heal. The sage, closely related to the magician, is different because the sage seeks to acquire knowledge and may use it to guide others. The sage archetype relates to that part of our psyche which yearns to undergo the spiritual journey. The shadow sage, although very knowledgeable perhaps, can be a dogmatic, judgmental, ideological critic. Even if you don't accept that these archetypes are embedded in our collective unconscious from ancient times, you can see them as role models for us to follow or not. Potentially warnings for us, as each archetype has that shadow side. We see them repeated over and over in popular films, TV series, and streaming online. If you don't know what I mean by streaming, ask me or someone under 30 after the service. And now Brendan will play us some more music from Gabriel Fauré. Thank you, Brenda. I think it's amazing that he can read the music for that from his phone. It's putting page turners out of business. I continue with some reflections. So I'm just summing up the concept of the father in light of those particular archetypes. The ruler, the hero, the magician, and the sage. The father is there to show leadership, to provide guidance, both practical and moral. And guidance involves discipline, demonstrating that there are consequences for inappropriate action. To offer physical protection, if required. Then there is the shadow father archetype, the controller, with dogmatic views and harsh penalties for disobedience, imposing willpower on others without regard for their well-being or development. This can involve manipulation or even physical abuse. Sadly, none of us are perfect, and our imperfection breeds imperfection. As the American esoteric philosopher Manly P. Hall said in his book Melchizedek and the Mystery of Fire, each man has his own world. He dwells in the midst of his little universe as the lord and ruler of the constituent parts of himself. Sometimes he is a wise king, devoting his life to the needs of his subjects. But more often, he is a tyrant, imposing many forms of injustice upon his vassals, either through ignorance of their needs or thoughtlessness concerning the ultimate disaster that he is bringing upon himself. Man's body is a living temple, and he is a high priest placed there to keep the house of the Lord in order. Now, in my past roles, I've had the privilege of hearing a lot of the intimate details of people's lives and the things that have affected them. I wanted to give one example that's relevant to the discussion today. A woman who confided in me about her tyrannical mother. It was a history of disempowerment, constant judgment, intense controlling. There was a father, but he was distant, a less dominant personality. When the woman suggested to me that she wished that her father had been a better father to her, I replied, maybe he needed to be a better mother to you. What I meant by that was that it wasn't structure and moral guidance that she was lacking in her life. It was nurturing love, warmth, validation, and acknowledgement. In other words, qualities which are traditionally related to motherhood because of these images and archetypes that we've all been exposed to. I think we can conclude that the qualities we've talked about, guidance and protection, whether in their life-giving or life-inhibiting manifestations, can be exhibited by any adult, regardless of gender. Being a good father comes down to the usual suspects, love and wisdom, to which can be added setting a good example. So, because people like lists, here are some suggestions for good fatherly behaviour. Or anyone, really. In the team sport of life, you are neither playing alongside your child nor merely a spectator. You are the coach. Whether reviewing what just happened or planning for the next project, you can be a constant source of encouragement and kindness. Your child has unique talents. This is who you must work with, not some ideal person. You're there not to guard them against the challenges of life, but to equip them to face those challenges. 2. Demonstrate love and respect to the other significant people in your child's life, whether that be your partner, your other children, your own parents, or your child's friends, and later your child's partner. 3. Set boundaries for behaviour and clearly explain them. You can establish consequences for bad behaviour. A child who knows and understands the rules will tend to develop self-discipline. It takes a lot of energy to counter the exuberance of youth, which is often misdirected, but it's worth the effort. If you take the easy way out and just yell, "Shut up, do it because I'm telling you to," the child learns to obey when the tyrant is present and play up when the tyrant isn't there. 4, take responsibility for your actions. And this means you can admit when you were wrong and say sorry when you've been unnecessarily hurtful. 5, keep a sense of humour. Appreciation of irony is especially helpful. The American writer Mark Twain made a shrewd observation about how his perception of his father changed over the years. He said, "When I was a boy of 14, my father was so ignorant I could hardly stand to have the old man around. But when I got to be 21, I was astonished at how much the old man had learned in 7 years. So I say to the fathers among us, let's celebrate what we have done to raise our children, and let's forgive ourselves for the times when our younger selves had some of their less optimal father moments. And as we celebrate fathers today, let's be thankful. Perhaps more importantly for some of us, let's be merciful. Let's forgive them for the times they let us down. Let's say on Father's Day that whatever our father has or has not taught us, we take responsibility now to become the most loving and wise person that we can be. And now I'll invite you to join with me in a litany. As with everything in this place, it's up to you whether you join in or not, but I hope you'll give it a go. I'm simply going to read out the first line, and I hope that we can all say together the lines that follow. For when you cared about me, thank you. For when you encouraged me, thank you. For the good things you taught me, thank you. For when you hurt me, I forgive you. For when you disappointed me, I forgive you. For when I felt a need for you and you weren't there, I forgive you. You did what you could. I'm in charge of my life now. You have had a profound influence on my life. I'm in charge of my life now. I treasure the good times we had. I let go of the rest. I'm in charge of my life now. And now, sir, a final piece of music. Being a Dad. Hope you've enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter. This permission can be obtained by emailing admin@unitariansa.org.au. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians or by visiting our website at unitariansa.org.au.